Hey, welcome everybody to Current Events, the podcast about what two randos are watching on television. This week we're watching Star Trek Discovery Episode 3, where the plot finally actually kind of gets started.
Yes.
What was the IMDb? Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, let me go ahead and just introduce Mike. It's like we haven't done this in 6 months.
Yeah. Instead of last week. Right.
With me is my good friend Mike Slocum. Say hi, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm Jake McMillan. And now we're going to start talking about the episode with the IMDb recap.
Yes, man. The first two episodes were like the cold open, and now we've got now we've got the real plot.
That's
okay.
Right.
So. Here we go. A 7.7 rate on IMDb. Burnham finds herself aboard the USS Discovery, where she quickly realizes that things are not as they seem, including the mysterious captain, Gabriel Lorca.
Things are not what they seem. I mean, how many times did you read that in TV Guide when you were a kid?
Yes, that's right.
It was very strange. I've never seen a TV series do an origin story for the first two full episodes.
Yep.
You know, it's like when we were kids, the origin story was in the opening credits.
Yeah, exactly.
I never forget the show that Chuck Connors was in, where he played, I think it was Branded. I think it was called Branded.
Yeah,
and they opened it, it's like with the song, and him, they're breaking his sword and ripping off his medals, and that was the origin story.
Yep.
That was all we got. And here we've got two solid hours of stuff that has nothing to do with apparently what the season's going to be about, or not that much.
It will become apparent later that how it folds in. It's setting a bunch of stuff up. Yep. But, yes, for the first little bit here, it didn't really matter, other than it positions Burnham in a shuttle that has ramifications. So
right, and this was an interesting thing because she's on a prison transport essentially.
Yes,
and the other convicts are not happy when they find out who she is.
Yeah,
it's also not helpful that she's wearing a different colored jumper than everybody else. To kind of point out, I guess that's the mutineers. Color is yellow.
That's right. You get yellow because you are yellow.
And so they are blaming her for 8,000 deaths, right? At the Battle of the Binary Stars. And
8,186.
Yeah. And she is doing the Vulcan thing now, which she probably should have done before. Yep. She made all these bad decisions. And that is, she is keeping her head held high, her eyes forward, and she is trying to maintain her dignity in impossible circumstances.
Yep. Yeah, so they're being, I believe that they're being sent to dilithium mines to do some digging. Hard labor, I guess. As they're on the shuttle heading off, and Burnham's making the, trying to fend off the hostile attitude of the other crewmates, suddenly some little sparkly things start appearing on the outside of the ship.
Yep.
Kind of cool. Burnham identifies them as some sort of electric eating organism.
This ran across my space's big switch.
Yes.
You're just flying along and somehow you fly into a cloud of gnats.
Yes. And you couldn't go around them because, who knows?
You don't have sensors to tell you that they're there. And this is such a common problem that the pilot is just like, okay, I'm going to go climb outside and clean them off. But if that's the case, then, I mean, seriously, they don't have, like, some sort of coating that keeps the...
Anti-electric eater coating.
Yeah. And this did aren't not they seem at warp? Very science-y.
Aren't they at warp? And the pilot goes outside they were to clean them off.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
It's kind of no wonder that her tether broke, right? Because, this really was not good writing. And it was surprised me because the first two episodes were extremely well written.
Yep.
And this episode is actually very good. But this opening bit is just full of false steps and, just unnecessary, unforced errors. There's just no need for this. They could have had engine malfunction.
Yeah, or anything. Or not. They should have just been going along and Discovery shows up and says, I'm relieving you of a prisoner.
Yep.
But instead, Burnham's just sitting there going, I'm not going to do anything about this. And everybody else is freaking out.
And there was a kind of unintentionally hilarious moment when the computer says, tether broken. And in the background, you see the pilot tumbling along the side.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, okay.
Yeah, comic relief there, maybe.
I think what this is that there are writers who are Star Trek nerds, right, mm-hmm. and who really know the universe, and then there are writers who know about Star Trek,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
and so they're like, you know, it'd be a really cool Star Trek moment. Bugs that eat the electricity mm-hmm. from the ship, and then they're like, oh no, and then, you know, and it's that's just
oh, that'd be cool.
Thinking. Yeah. Yeah, I think J.J. Abrams suffered from a lot of that. I don't know why the 2009 reboot was so good mm-hmm. and everything he's done since was so bad,
yeah.
right?
Well,
yeah. That it's like doesn't seem familiar with the source material when he takes over these projects. You know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so he needs good writers to guide him as a director.
That's got to be what it is. Yeah. I'm gonna go back and take a look at the writers who wrote that 2009 reboot and see if they were involved in the following disasters.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so back to the electricity. So essentially, they are saved by the Discovery, which shows up this massive ship.
Yep.
Which is an interesting design because it's angular.
Yes,
it's not rounded and aerodynamic like the other Enterprises that we're used to, or starships were used.
Which, of course, makes perfect sense in space. Is like, right. Why do you need a rounded aerodynamic ship that is flying where there is no resistance anywhere?
Right.
But it makes its bold statement is that it's a little different than the other ships. So right away you go, something's different about this ship.
Yeah.
And and that's sort of the end of our cold open. We get, again, the wonderful opening montage.
And then, there's a really good flyby of the Discovery by the camera, right?
Oh, yes.
And that's a real nice, piece of special effects, and it's a beautiful ship.
Yep. So we're, Burnham and the shuttle is loaded onto the
Discovery.
Beamed in or tractored in, and the security officer shows up and unloads the crew and is not particularly happy to see them.
She refers to Michael Burnham as the Starfleet's first mutineer.
Yes.
Yeah, that's just not. She's an interesting character, and we're going to learn a lot more about her, I think, over the season.
Yes.
Because there's just little bits of stuff that she had to do. I don't know if just the actress really infused that her part with some sort of backstory, but she made it very interesting.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, and so then as the prisoners are being led to the mess hall, it turns out, mm-hmm. they're noticing all of the differences about the Discovery. For instance, all the silver shirts, which I guess are the science division, and the black badges.
Yes, and they've never seen those before. Yes, it's a different kind of ship, and there's lots of activity, lots of sort of crew walking around doing, you know, clipboards and all sorts of interesting stuff there. That's
It looks more like a working ship than any other Enterprise I've ever seen.
Yes, exactly. And this is what you'd think, you know, if this ship is, you know, and what did they say, some huge number of science projects, or
300 something science inspect. Yeah, it's incredible.
Interesting. They go in, and Burnham immediately sees at least one old crewmate from
Kayla.
Mm-hmm. Kayla, who's got an appliance on her head now.
Oh, right. Wait, she didn't have that before the Battle of the Binary Star? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I noticed the scar tissue around the appliance, so that does make sense. Yeah, and so she's not happy to see Michael.
Not at all. And neither are several other sort of people. And then the prisoners decide, you know, I really don't like this situation. There were, you know, 8,186 people who died because of you, Burnham. Let's make it 8,187.
Yeah, I mean, this is another kind of unforced error for me. I mean, I get the attack from the other prisoners, mm-hmm. but not in the mess hall, not next to a table full of security personnel who are armed.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Nothing seemed to precipitate the attack. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was kind of crazy, but anyway, so they do it, and Michael gets a chance to show off her Vulcan kung
martial
fu.
Arts. Yes, which mm-hmm. you know, nice. It takes them all down. But you note that none of the security personnel or any of the crew says no. We're just going to let this play out.
Actually, the head of security stops her men from
from
intervening.
Yep.
let's just watch, you know.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she, of course, stops the fight when Michael is winning, by pointing her phaser at Michael and saying, "The captain wants to see you," with a kind of a saucy little smile. You know, this is what I mean about this actor. She just does. She took a small part and she really infused it with a lot of character, which is brilliant.
Yep. And immediately then she walks onto the bridge and Saru is standing there.
Yeah.
This is like awesome. Like, oh my.
Well, actually, he's sitting in the captain's chair. And
yes.
For a moment, you think he's the captain.
Yep.
Right? And you're like, oh no. Right? This guy's going to, you know, he's going to take out his pound of flesh. But in fact, he's the first officer and she's being escorted into the ready room to meet with Captain Lorca.
Yeah. Now I'm trying to. I have an interesting. There was a nice. He has a little speech and talks about, you know, before the future came and hunger and need and want were obsolete and, you know, basically, you know, you're here for a reason and the war all changed all that. I did notice that the basically said that or some, either he inferred or she inferred that the shuttle had changed course halfway through their journey, basically because Lorca decided to redirect them.
She drops a couple of statements in this conversation with Captain Lorca that indicate to us that he hijacked the shuttle to get her on board.
Yep, exactly. Because apparently he has lots of discretion on who he goes to grab.
Yeah, this would be sort of like the Manhattan Project of World War II, right? You've mm-hmm. got a bunch of scientists and you've got a general who has to deal with them, and they're not military men, so it's hard to get them to march in a line. And you're basically building a weapon that's going to decide the outcome of the war, right?
Yep.
So he is absolutely has all the discretion he wants, and he wants her.
Yep.
And she says no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, thank you. And he comes back with, okay, well, you're either working or you're confined. You know, you're either working or you're confined to quarters and you won't do anything. So
no, what he says is, do you think you have a choice?
Oh yes. Yeah,
you think I care about your preference?
Yes.
You know, he says you're going to work and you're going to work, and when you're not working, you're going to be in your quarters under house arrest, essentially.
Yep.
So
yep.
He does a good job, and this is Jason Isaacs playing mm-hmm. this part, who has played a similar loose cannon sort of mad scientist part in the OA.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd ever seen that show, you would just be afraid every time you saw Jason Isaacs.
Yes. Yes.
So anyway.
She wants to know working on what and gets basically no response.
Right. Yeah. People are not eager to tell her. I mean, she is a mutineer.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So, I mean, this is about the lowest security clearance anyone can have is mutineer.
That's right. Yeah. You get to know nothing.
Right.
And so then we get a cut to a great scene where she's in the quarters and she meets Tilly.
Tilly just marched in and saved this episode.
Yes.
She is so good. The actress is good. The character is extremely well written.
Yep.
And yeah, the moment when Michael says, "You seem nervous," she goes, "Well, I was just trying to decide if I should tell you that you're sleeping in my bunk."
Yes, exactly. And then what's your name? Oh, Michael. You know, that's a really strange name for a woman. I have never heard of any Starfleet officer with a name except the traitor, Michael Burnham. That wouldn't be you, is it? It's like
you're not her, right?
You're not her, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And this is one of the great things, because Tilly is one of the most genuine characters you're going to meet, because there is that person who is just incredibly awkward in social situations and has a tendency to get nervous and speak her mind, right, mm-hmm. without any filter.
Yes.
And they can say things like, "You're not that Michael Burnham, right?"
Right, ah. Right.
Yeah. So she's very good. It's really good to see her. She's a really good character.
Yeah, I also really like the line where she said, "I'll call you Mickey," and Michael Burnham goes, "No, you won't."
Right. One of the things I will say is that so far, apart from Sheru in the series, I have not seen any characters who are not just the people I would expect to see. Right. So mm-hmm. Captain Georgiou was your standard Starfleet captain. You know, so Michael is your, you know, heart in the right place, but made some terrible mistakes type, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
Heart of gold type character. So, you know, and everybody else really kind of, even Jason Isaacs' character is pretty much your classic mad captain.
Yep.
And these are all characters you would see in any Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. When Tilly walks in, this is a whole new thing.
Yes.
This is not something we've seen before, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Why is she there? Well, she's a cadet. She must have some reason why she was, you know, chosen. But it's a very good scene there.
Yeah.
And then the black alert.
Black alert happens, and water droplets appear for a moment.
Condense. Yes.
And then disappear.
Yeah, it's very mysterious. Yes.
Yeah. So they're getting ready to send Michael to work, and we finally get to see someone print out a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought about this, right? It's like no one in Star Trek has a closet.
Yep.
Right, because they just print out and recycle everything, you know, whenever they want it, right? So every time you change your uniform, you just print a new one and you recycle the old one.
Yep.
And we finally saw that.
Yes, yes, which is cool. And then Saru picks her up. Another interesting conversation as they're.
Oh, so this is a great conversation, and it really goes to how fantastic the character of Saru is,
mm-hmm.
because he is very plainly spoken, and because of his species, he is highly conflicted about Michael,
mm-hmm.
and because he's both of those things, he says the most interesting things.
Yes.
Right? Like, for instance, I think you're one of the smartest, best officers who ever served until you weren't.
Yes.
And also, you know, I think that you're, you know, brilliant and blah, 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 but you're dangerous.
Yes.
And then finally,
someone to fear.
And then finally, the killer, when he says, "I intend to do a better job of protecting my captain than you did yours."
Yeah, yep.
That's incredible.
Yeah, they're very good. This is some very good burns in there. It was nice. But anyway, so we find out that Michael has been assigned to engineering. She gets dropped off there, and weird stuff's going on. You know, it's like she's kind of looking around and tries to, you know, figure out what is this? This does not look like a normal engineering station here. And she notes several of the weird, weird bottles of glowing stuff and all this interesting engineering.
Engineering or science?
Science, yeah, science.
Yeah, well, I think science, right? Engineering
it is
more
but
like getting the motor running.
Right, but that's the point, is that she's in engineering, but it looks like a science lab. It's, you know, it's not, it's that, I think that's why she's taken aback. It's like, wait, this doesn't look like normal engineering. Well, some of it does, obviously, but, you know, there's lots of conduits and all that good stuff, but then there's a little glass chamber in the middle.
Yeah, I kind of also kind of felt for her, too, because I've kind of been through the same thing when I went to work for the National Security Agency. And when you're new there, no one knows what to tell you.
Yes.
Right. So you generally get sort of information sort of seeps into you, over time until mm-hmm. you can finally do your job. Right.
Yep.
Because no one wants to be responsible for telling the new guy something he wasn't supposed to know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And we walked around with badges, just collections of badges around our necks that, you know, had all the different clearances and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you can't just walk over to somebody and flip through them and see if they have the right one for your project, you know.
Yep.
So yeah, exactly. There's that feeling of you need to get to work, but we're not going to tell you what we're doing.
Yes. So she gets basically a nice little interaction with Tilly there, you know, it's like, no, we have assigned seats.
Right. That was amazing.
And then the conversation with the chief engineer is like, What are you doing? Get to work. It's not like we have assigned seats or anything.
Well, that's Stamets. And this is another interesting character that you don't normally see in Star Trek, right? So Stamets comes in, and I mean, I was just sitting there going, wait, what? You know, because this guy is, he's bitchy. And not in the Doc Bones, you know, way, grouchy way, but I mean, he's hand on hip bitchy, you know, and he's a name caller. And also at this moment, it sort of clicked for me that this is like, has been so far since she arrived on the Discovery, like a teen high school movie.
Yes.
She's like the new student in the high school, and she's the nerdy kid is Tilly, and the head cheerleader is Stamets, and the principal is Jason Isaacs. You know what I'm saying? It's like all of these different prototypes are there, and they're all operating the same way, which is whose turf are you going to end up in, right?
Yeah,
so that was very interesting. But yeah, so Stamets is, and of course we're going to find out that Stamets is not really a Starfleet officer. He's a scientist.
Yes, yes.
Right. And that explains his behavior. Right?
Yeah,
that,
he's in the science wing. He's, you know, he's not under the normal command structure. So he gets to be bitchy and whine about how they co-opted his code or co-opted his experiments and. There's an interesting little conversation with one of his counterparts on another ship, the Glenn, who's talking about, oh, we're planning a massive displacement. And we don't understand what that means yet. We will find out later. And then Burnham gets to go find a bug in some code. And it's like, here, go reconcile this code. Figure out what the problem is. And so she goes off and, you know, starts looking through
that's like that make work when you first show up on a project and they're like, well, here, just read the code. Right, and you can tell that code they gave her is not commented, it's not even indented. So she spends, you know, an inordinate amount of time going through the code, but she also notices a secret room that only can be entered and this is just so odd to me, but by breath.
Yes.
A breathalyzer, right?
Yeah.
And so she goes back to Stamets at the end of what appears to be a very long shift and hands him the code and says, here's your error, but this doesn't make any sense because it's a confusion of biological terms and physics and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And he's just like, I'm not going to tell a mutineer what we're doing. But she goes, okay, well, here's your error, click, you know, and he looks at it and goes, yep. So I spent probably 2 hours the other day tracking down a bug where I had misspelled the word contract. And of course, because it's JavaScript, it compiles and runs fine.
Until it hits that spot.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was just this bizarre behavior because, you know, I knew the value was being passed in, but nothing was happening with it, and it was because it was named wrong.
I did that today, too. I spent quite a while finding out that I had forgotten to put a plus sign between a string and a variable in a template.
Yep.
It's the
little things that will cost you the most time.
Yeah.
So anyway, she finds where he misspelled some word. So then that night, while Tilly is snoring, Michael uses a cloth to steal her breath, basically.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, and so then she goes into the...
garden, basically.
Yeah, so she goes back to the lab, and she uses a puff of air and this rag to recreate Tilly's breath, which really right there highlights how bad a security choice that was.
Yes.
And She gets in and finds out that what's being hidden there is a forest.
Yep.
Very strange, right?
Yes, very strange.
And I just have a note here that she can't follow the rules to save her life, literally.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what the transition here was, where we discovered that she's on a classified mission, or that the Glenn was, and there's some incident. The Glenn apparently was lost due to some bloom failure.
He says so. Anyway, it's Lorca comes into the science lab and says that the crew was lost during a black alert. Mm-hmm. Because of a bloom, and then Stamets says it sounds like a massive bloom failure.
Yep.
Yeah, so then Lorca tells them we have to go get everything classified off of that ship.
Yep.
And what we don't know, but what we suspect, and we know a little bit about, is the fact that one of the members of that crew was a very close friend of Stamets.
Yes, well, that's the one that he was talking to earlier, that he had the conversation with, and where they said he was going to do a massive displacement.
Well, it was like Stamets was saying, well, we got to 12, and his friend says, we're going to 192 tonight.
Yeah, it's like, we can turn it up to 11.
I mean, so right then you have this really bad feeling.
Yes. Yep.
So anyway, then there's a real snippy fight between Lorca and Stamets, basically between science and war.
Yep.
Right. Lorca reminds him this is not a democracy.
Yes. You're taking Burnham. This is not a democracy.
Right.
I can't remember who it was. Was it Saru who said, yeah, she's the smartest Starfleet officer I've ever known? And
right, so
and he knows
right.
you too.
Yeah,
the chief engineer.
That's a nice line. Yes. So basically, Lorca says, "I want you to take Burnham with you on a away team to loot what you can from the ship." That's when they kind of get into a fight I don't want to bring her with me and all this kind of stuff. And that's when Saru says she's the smartest Starfleet officer I've ever known. And that's when Lorca says, and she knows you.
That's right. Yeah.
So that sets us up for the away team to, and of course, a nice move here is there are no senior officers on the away team.
Yes. There's this chief engineer, but he has to be there because he's the expert on whatever went wrong with the Glenn. So
right, yeah, that would be that would definitely be like there's something wrong with an abandoned ship, and therefore we're going to send over our engineer to take a look at what's wrong over there. That makes more sense than we're going to send the captain, the priest, the doctor.
But they do send head of security and a red shirt, although they're not in red, but something's going to happen here.
Well, I've got a note here that at least the red shirts look like soldiers.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's got a nice big gun, and
he's wearing body armor. He has guns. You know, he's built like a spec ops guy, it always looked like they just drafted like five guys from just the dining hall,
walking down the hall.
With a gun and a red shirt. This looks like somebody who's actually dressed for battle.
Yes, which a whole lot of sense. You'd think that you've got on a warship, you've got your fleet and your scientists and your marines. Because you need those Marines, and they're responsible for physical security on and off the ship, and it makes perfect sense. It's like, I'm really surprised that we don't, see that more.
They took it seriously. I don't think that they ever took sort of the war fighting side of the Enterprise, very seriously, because that's not the purpose of the Enterprise. It is a science and exploration ship that has capabilities to defend itself and friends, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so they never really wanted to focus on it. So, they always had these head of security guy who was just somebody in a uniform,
We get a nice little little comment as they're approaching the Glen. There's some Lycidia rupture Stamets goes into this physics has biology conversation and talks about he's a little bitter about how the war effort co-opted his research, and we get a little bit more depth about how he feels about this whole interaction thing.
And it's important too that that Michael is quite able to speak with him enough about it that he goes into his, there's no difference between physics and biology, right?
Yep.
This is all the same thing, and they're obviously experimenting with something that he refers to as the mycelial network.
Yes.
And we don't really know what that is. They approach the ship. It's just drifting in space at this point. Mm-hmm. We've already been told the crew has been lost. We don't know what happened to them.
Yep.
And so they pilot in and land in the bay.
Yep.
The shuttle bay. And
interesting that they didn't beam over. So it's
It's because they had to get the stuff and they had to figure
out the room.
Right, and the room that their stuff is in is shielded.
Right, yes.
Right, so, and they don't know why, because theirs is not.
Yes.
Right, and yeah, so then they go in and start exploring the ship. The lights are out, obviously, everything, all the systems are down, and they are being sort of hunted by some sort of beast.
Oh, yes, this is very alien-esque. It's, there's mm-hmm. something on the ship. And it's making noises, and then they come across dead Klingon. Well, first they come across dead Starfleet people, and they look like
something out of the movie The Thing. Right?
Yes.
So they haven't been killed by a monster. They were killed by some sort of spatial event that sort of twisted themselves
helical structures or something. Yes. But then they come across some Klingons who have just been ripped apart.
Right. First they find a Bat'leth.
Yes.
Oh, and they're like, wait a minute.
hold on.
Yeah, then they find the dead Klingons, and they're like, what could kill a dozen Klingons like this?
Yes.
And then a Klingon steps out and shushes them. Right before this some giant monster hits him and begins ripping him to pieces.
Yes. It was very horror story-y. It was it was pretty well done.
It's very good, yeah.
Yeah.
Then we have a chase scene.
Yep. Running.
We lose a red shirt.
Yep.
So they go into the lab and begin gathering the things.
Pulling
that they
logs and checking spore containment stats, and there's bodies all over the place.
Finding strange equipment that they don't have.
Yes.
Right? So this is why the ship was able to do the things it was able to. So far ahead of them is because they had the special equipment. So they grab that stuff while this beast is coming through a steel containment door.
Yes. And it's they're trying to burn through the other door to get out the other end, but that's not going to be in time because the thing's coming through. So Burnham gets a little idea, gets a phaser. What? I'm not giving a phaser to a mutineer. But she eventually convinces him, and then she goes, she does a little distraction thing.
She shoots it, pisses it off, it starts to chase her, and she climbs into a Jeffrey's
tube. Exactly. Because she knows it's thin. So, right. Or at least she hopes that it's built like any other Starfleet vessel. And it turns out it is Jeffrey tubes, just big enough for people to squirm through.
Well, it's not just that. The thing that she was counting on was when she got to that particular opening, she could drop down directly onto the top of the shuttle.
Yes. Yep.
Right. So if it's not in the same place, she's going to be dropping down into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So
she does. Yeah, and she gets into the shuttle, and they get away.
Yeah, and it was very. I think it was a very well done scene. It was just, it was nice and tense. You got lots of, little reveals. Klingons probably found the ship after it was adrift and came aboard to figure out what was going on. And obviously there's this thing here which is probably part of the whatever happened to the Glenn. We don't know exactly how it ties in, but... because it's it probably didn't cause the spatial the distortion of the people, but it's just kind of why is it there, what's the deal? It's a nice little mystery. Anyway, so we cut back over to the bridge, and the prisoner is being transferred. Saru is basically speaking with Burnham, and he goes off into the, I respect you, you're valuable.
So essentially, she is brought in to speak to Captain Lorca before the ship departs, and she goes off to do her life sentences. And he offers her a post on the Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And valuable she asset. Says no. And yes. She says no for a really good reason. And she says, the reason that you want me is because I'm a mutineer. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to create a weapon that would violate the Geneva Convention.
And
you
whatever
think
other
that because I'm so desperate mm-hmm. to get my job back that I would support you doing that, and I do not, and so yep. I'm not going to help you. And he's and Jason Isaacs is so good in this scene and really in all of the scenes that he's in, because he just sort of takes all this and he goes, you know, you love being right, but I'll bet you hate being wrong. Even more. So yeah. I'm going to stop you before you go too far down this wrong road.
Yep.
And he has them beamed into the science facility.
Yep.
And then he basically explains what they're doing by putting her in the glass case and instantaneously showing her spaces that are all over the galaxy.
Yep, yep. And yes, it's you know, she guessed that they were building illicit weapons. He shows her the reality that they're not a new weapon, but a new way to travel.
And of course, what we know is that all new technology is a new weapon.
Oh well, he even goes off to say that it's like he says, I did choose you. I want the kind of thinking that wins wars, and think about what we could do with this new technology. We could jump in and deal with Klingons and jump out. So, yes, it is a weapon. It's not a bioweapon, but it is clearly going to be used by Starfleet as a weapon.
And it's not going to be an illegal weapon, which clears the way for her to go ahead and sign on.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. And so then I guess we kind of back out a little bit, and we see that Saru is in the mess hall, and his complicated feelings for Michael cause his fear flanges to rise as the prison shuttle leaves without her.
Yeah. Oh, and we missed there was a good line at the end of that scene just before he left, where basically Lorca says, you know, you helped start a war, don't you want to help me end it?
Right. Yes.
And then then we see the shuttle depart and Saru's ganglia twitch. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So, and then we get a shot of them destroying the Glen.
Yep.
And it turns out that they beamed the monster aboard.
Yes. Yep.
And they've got it in some sort of shielded container where Jason Isaacs can talk to it.
or taunt it or whatever he does. Yeah. We also got a nice little Tilly welcoming Michael back a little sideshow of Michael. She was chanting something about Alison, some of the Alice in Wonderland lines while she was crawling through the Jeffries tube, and mm-hmm. now we see that she's got a real Alice in Wonderland book. Mm-hmm. The Lorca talking, the beaming, this layers upon layers is like beaming the beast back in. It's like, whoa, man, you know, what are you thinking here? At least that's where we go from here.
So that is really episode one of of
Discovery season two.
Right. We've basically finished the cold open, which took 2 hours, mm-hmm. and now we're starting our story. And it's very good. It's very fascinating. It's an interesting concept that they're not building a weapon; they're building a new way to travel.
Yep.
Sort of something similar to the Ansible from
Ender's Game.
Ender's Game, yeah. So this a way of communicating instantaneously. That's right. The Ansible is just instantaneous communication. Okay. This is apparently. Now I was trying to decide when he was showing her places that she wasn't really there. He was using the network to show her images from there.
Yes, I believe
right.
So.
Because if he could have moved her there, then they would be way ahead of even where the Glen was, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah, so, but he was basically saying, look, we can go anywhere almost instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And, so what'd you think overall?
Oh, I like it. And one of the reasons why I like it is it's not your typical Star Trek.
No, it's not. And that was one of the big complaints I remember hearing when the show first came out was this isn't Star Trek.
But I don't care. It's still good.
I mean, if these canon gatekeepers were allowed to decide what our entertainment looked like from their basements, their mother's basements, then, you know, everything would look like Rise of Skywalker. And guess what? They didn't like that either.
Yeah.
You know, it's you got to remember that Star Wars Episode 4 was something new. Mm-hmm. When it came out, it didn't adhere to anybody else's canon, you know?
Yep.
And Star Trek was the same way. And Star Trek Next Generation was different from the original series. And that made it good and interesting, you know?
And this is, obviously has the potential to be very good. Now, it'll hit some rough, bumpy spots. But all in all, I think it's, you know, it's a great addition to the, you know, the Star Trek universe. Even if it is bends the universe just a little bit. You know, because you figure if this really worked, how come you know in Next Generation they're still warping around?
I mean it can't work. because you know it's if it did, you're right. That would the Next Generation would have been a completely different story.
Yeah.
So we don't know, or I don't know, you know, but I don't know what's going to happen with this technology, except that we know it's not going to come into common use because it's still not in use in Picard.
Yes, exactly.
So you know, you're talking about. This takes place something like 20, 12, 15 years before the Next Generation.
It actually takes place even before...
The original series. That's right. It takes place before the original series. And so they didn't have it. The Next Generation didn't have it.
Yeah.
Picard doesn't have it. Which means it never developed into any kind of realistic technology.
And we will discover lots of interesting things about it. But anyway, so I think it's going to be a great journey that we have here.
Yeah,
so.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it more because we're kind of watching it together and talking about it. It gives me more of a stake in it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so yeah, that's helped quite a bit. So
yes, good, cool.
Yeah. All right, good. So next week, episode 4 of Star Trek Discovery, season 1.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.